Diana said carefully. But do you? Do you understand, Diana Rayburn? He snarled. Then his voice softened. Maybe you do. You've known the injustice and intolerance of the Clave. If only you hadn't come here. It's the Blackthorns I despise, not the Ravens. I always rather liked you. You liked me because you thought I was too frightened of the Clave to look closely at you, Diana said, turning away from him. To suspect you. For a moment she faced Emma and the others. She mouthed, "Run," at them silently, before turning back to Malcolm. Emma didn't budge, but she did hear a movement behind her. It was quiet. If she hadn't been wearing a rune that sharpened her hearing, it would have been inaudible. To her surprise, the movement was Julian disappearing from her side. Mark was next to him. Silently, they slipped back into the tunnel. Emma wanted to call after Julian. What was he doing? But she couldn't, not without alerting Malcolm. Malcolm was still moving toward Diana. In a moment, he'd be where he could see them. She put a hand to the hilt of Cortana. Ty was gripping a knife, white-knuckled. Livy held her saber, her face set and determined.
"Who told you?" Malcolm said.
"Was it Rook?" "I didn't think he'd guessed." He tipped his head to the side.
"No. You weren't sure when you got here. You suspected."
His mouth turned down at the corners. "It was Katerina, wasn't it?" Diana stood with her feet apart, her head back, a warrior stance. "When the second line of the poem was deciphered and I heard the phrase, Blackthorn blood, I realized that we weren't searching for a killer of mundanes and fairies. That this was about the Blackthorn family. And there is no one more likely to know about a grudge that goes back years than Katerina. I went to her."
"And you couldn't tell the Blackthorns where you went because of the reason you know Katerina," said Malcolm.
"She's a nurse. A nurse to mundanes."
"How do you think I found out?"
"She didn't tell you about me, Malcolm," snapped Diana. "She keeps secrets. What she told me about you was simply what she knew. That you'd loved a Nephilim girl, and that you'd become an Iron Sister. She'd never questioned the story because, as far as she knew, you'd never questioned the story. But once you told me that, I was able to check with the Iron Sisters. No Nephilim girl with that story had become one of them. And once I realized that was a lie, the rest began to come together. I remembered what Emma had told us about what she'd found here. The clothes, the candelabra. Katerina went to the Spiral Labyrinth and I came here."
"So Katerina gave you the charm to get you through the protection circle," said Malcolm. "Unfortunate that you wasted it. Did you have a plan or did you just rush here in a panic?"
Diana said nothing. Her face looked carved out of stone.
"Always have a plan," said Malcolm. "I, for one, have been crafting my current plan for years. And now here you are, the proverbial fly in the ointment.
I suppose there's nothing to do but kill you, though I hadn't planned to, and exposing you to the Clave would have been so much more fun." Something silver bloomed from Diana's hand, a sharp-pointed throwing star. It whipped toward Malcolm. One moment he was in its path, the next he was across the room. The throwing star hit the wall of the cave and tumbled to the ground where it lay glimmering. Malcolm made a hissing noise like an angry cat. Sparks flew from his fingers. Diana was lifted up into the air and flung back against the wall, then to the floor, her arms clamping themselves to her sides. She rolled into a sitting position, but when she tried to stand, her knees crumpled under her. She thrashed at her invisible bonds.
"You won't be able to move," Malcolm said in a bored voice. "You're paralyzed. I could have killed you instantly, of course, but, well, this is quite a trick I'm about to perform, and every trick needs an audience." He smiled suddenly. "I suppose I shouldn't forget the audience I have. It's just that they aren't very lively."
Suddenly the cavern was alive with light. The thick shadows behind the stone table dissolved, and Emma could see the cavern reached back and back. There were long rows of seats set up, like church pews, neat and orderly, and the seats were filled with people.
"Followers," Ty breathed.
He had only seen them before out of the window of the Institute, Emma thought, and wondered what he thought of them up close. It was strange to know that Malcolm had led all these people, that he had such power over them that they did anything for him. Malcolm, who they'd all thought of as a foolish figure, someone who tied his own shoelaces together. The followers sat very still, their eyes wide open,
their hands in their laps like rows of dolls. Emma recognized Belinda and some of the others who had come to retrieve Sterling. Their heads were tilted to the side, a gesture of interest, Emma thought, until she realized how awkward the angle was and knew that it wasn't fascination that kept them so still. It was that their necks were broken. Someone pressed forward and put a hand on Emma's shoulder. It was Christina.
Emma, she whispered. They must attack. Diego thinks we can surround Malcolm, that enough of us could bring him down.
Emma stood paralyzed. She wanted to run forward to attack Malcolm, but she could feel something in the back of her mind, an insistent voice telling her to wait. It wasn't fear. It wasn't her own hesitation. If she hadn't known better, if she didn't think it would mean she was going crazy, she would have said it was Julian's voice.
Emma, wait. Please wait.
Wait, she whispered.
Wait.
Christina's anxiety was palpable.
Emma, we need to.
Malcolm strode into the circle. He was standing close to Tavi's feet, which looked bare and vulnerable in the light. He reached out to the draped object standing at the foot of the table and twitched the cloth off it. It was the candelabra Emma remembered, the brass one that had been bare of candles. It had become a far more macabre thing. Onto each spiked point was jammed a severed hand, wrist down. Rigid, dead fingers reached for the ceiling. One hand bore a ring with a flashy pink stone. Sterling's hand.
Do you know what this is? Malcolm asked, a gloating note in his voice. Do you, Diana?
Diana looked up. Her face was swollen and bloody. She spoke in a croaking whisper.
Hands of glory.
Malcolm looked pleased.
It took me quite a long time to figure out that this was what I needed, he said.
This is why my attempt with the Carstairs family didn't work. The spell called for mandrake, and it was a long time before I realized that the word mandrake was meant to stand for man de gloire, a hand of glory. He smiled with keen pleasure. The darkest of dark magic.
Because of the way they're made, said Diana, they're murderers' hands, the hands of killers. Only a hand that has taken a human life can become a hand of glory.
Oh, the small gasp in the darkness was Ty, his eyes wide and startled. I get it now. I get it.
Emma turned toward him. They were pressed against opposite walls of the tunnel, looking across at each other. Livia was next to Ty. Diego, on his other side, Drew and Christina were beside Emma.
Diego said it was weird, Ty continued in a low whisper, that the murder victims were such a mix, humans, fairies. It's because the victims never mattered. Malcolm didn't want victims, he wanted murderers. It was why the followers needed Sterling back, and why Belinda cut off his hands and left with them, and why Malcolm let her. He needed the murderer's hands, the hands they killed with, so he could do this. Belinda took both hands because she didn't know which one he'd killed with, and she couldn't ask.
But why, Emma wanted to demand. Why the burning, the drowning, the markings, the rituals? Why? But she was afraid that if she opened her mouth, a scream of rage would come out.
This is wrong, Malcolm.
Diana's voice was choked but steady. I've spent days talking to those who've known you for years. Katerina Loss, Magnus Bane. They said you were a good, likable man. That can't be all lies.
Lies? Malcolm's voice rose. You want to talk about lies?
They lied to me about Annabelle. They said she had become an Iron Sister. All of them told me the same lie. Magnus, Katerina, Tessa. It was from a fairy I found out that they had lied. From a fairy I learned what had really happened to Annabelle. By then she was long dead. The Blackthorns murdering their own. That was generations back. The boy you have chained to that table never knew Annabelle. These are not the people who hurt you, Malcolm. These are not the people who took Annabelle from you. They're innocent.
No one is innocent, Malcolm shouted. She was a Blackthorn. Annabelle Blackthorn. She loved me, and they took her. They took her and walled her up, and she died there in the tomb. They did that to me, and I do not forgive. I will never forgive.
He took a deep breath, clearly forcing himself to be calm.
13 hands of glory, he said, and Blackthorn blood. That will bring her back, and she will be with me again.
He turned away from Diana, toward Tavi, and picked up the knife that lay on the table by Tavi's head.
The tension in the tunnel was sudden and silent and explosive. Hands reached for weapons, grips tightened on hilts. Diego raised his axe. 5 pairs of eyes turned to Emma. Diana struggled even more desperately as Malcolm raised the knife. Lights sparked off it, strangely beautiful, illuminating the lines of the poem on the wall. But we loved with a love that was more than love. Julian, Emma thought. Julian, I've got no choice. We can't wait for you. Go, she whispered, and they exploded out of the tunnel. Ty and Livy and Emma and Christina, all of them, Diego rushing straight for Malcolm. For a split second, Malcolm looked surprised. He dropped the knife. It hit the floor, and, made of soft copper, the blade bent. Malcolm stared down at it, then back up at the Blackthorns and their friends and began laughing. He stood, laughing, in the center of the protection circle as they rushed at him, and one by one were slammed backward by the force of the invisible protective wall. Diego swung his battle axe. The axe glanced off the air as if it had struck steel and recoiled backward. "Surround Malcolm!" Emma shouted. "He can't stay in the protected area forever. Circle him!" They spread out, surrounding the protective runes on the floor. Emma found herself across from Ty, knife in hand. He was looking at Malcolm with a peculiar expression on his face, half incomprehension, half hatred. Ty understood acting, pretending, but betrayal on the scale Malcolm had practiced it was something else again. Emma couldn't understand it herself, and she'd had a clear view of just what kind of betrayal people were capable of when she'd watched the Clave exile Helen and abandon Mark. "You'll have to come out of there eventually," Emma said, "and when you do..." Malcolm bent and seized his damaged knife from the floor. When he straightened up, Emma saw that his eyes were the color of bruises. "When I do, you'll be dead," he spat, and whirled to reach out a hand toward the rows of the dead. "Rise," he called. "My followers, rise." There was a series of groans and creaks. Throughout the cave, the dead followers began to stand. They moved neither unusually slowly nor unusually quickly, but they moved with steady determination. They did not seem to be armed, but as they neared the main chamber, Belinda, her eyes blank and empty, her head cocked to the side, flung herself at Christina. Her fingers were bent into claws, and before Christina could react, Belinda had torn bloody gashes down the side of her face. With a cry of disgust, Christina shoved the corpse away from her, slashing her butterfly knife across Belinda's throat. It made no difference. Belinda stood up again, the wound in her throat bloodless and flopping, and swung toward Christina. Before she could take more than a single step, there was a flash of silver. Diego's axe sang out, whipping forward, severing Belinda's head from her neck. The headless body sank to the ground. The wound still wasn't bleeding. It looked cauterized. "Behind you!" Christina shouted. Diego whirled. Behind him, 2 other followers were reaching to grab and claw at them. He spun in a swift arc, his axe taking both their heads with it. There was a noise behind Emma. Instantly she calculated where the follower behind her was. She leaped, spun, kicked, and knocked him back. It was the clarinetist with the curly hair. She stabbed downward with Cortana, severing his head from his body. She thought of him winking at her in the midnight theater. "I never knew his name," she thought, and then whirled back around. The room was in chaos. Just as Malcolm must have wanted, the shadow hunters had abandoned the perimeter of the protection circle to ward off the followers. Malcolm was ignoring everything that was going on around him. He had seized up the candelabra with the hands of glory on it and carried it to the head of the table. He set it down beside Tavi, who slept on, a rosy flush on his cheeks. Drew had run to Diana and was struggling to help her get to her feet. As a follower approached them, Drew whipped around and ran the woman through with her blade. Emma saw her swallow as the body crumpled and realized it was the first time Drew had killed someone in battle, even if that someone was already dead. Livy was fighting gloriously, feinting and parrying with her saber, driving followers toward Ty. He was carrying a seraph blade, one that blazed brightly in his grip. As a blonde follower lurched into him, he drove the blade into the back of the dead man's neck. There was a searing, crackling noise as the seraph blade met flesh, and the follower began to burn. He staggered away, clawing at his burning flesh, before tumbling to the ground. "Seraph blades!" Emma called. "Everyone use your seraph blades!" Lights blazed up through the cavern, and Emma heard the murmur of voices calling the names of angels. "Jophiel, Ramiel, Duma." Through the haze of light, she saw Malcolm with the bent copper knife. He ran a hand along the blade, and it sprang back under his fingers,
as sharp as it had been originally. He placed the tip of it against Abby's throat and sliced downward, slitting open the little boy's Batman t-shirt. The worn cotton curled open, revealing his thin, vulnerable chest. Emma's world seemed to drop away. In the chaos of the room, she was still fighting, her serif blade flaming as she plunged it into one follower, then two, then three. Their bodies crumpled all around her. She tried to push through them, toward Tavi. Just as she heard Julian's voice, she whirled around but couldn't see him, and yet his voice had been clear in her ear, saying, "Emma, Emma, move aside, away from the tunnel." She jumped aside, skirting the body of a fallen follower, just as she heard a new noise, the thunder of hooves. A sound pierced the room, something between a howl and a crash of an enormous bell. It bounced off the walls, a brutal echo, and even Malcolm looked up. Windspear exploded from the mouth of the tunnel. Julian sat astride him, his hands buried in the horse's mane. Mark was behind him, gripping his brother's belt. They seemed to blur almost into one person as Windspear leaped. Malcolm gaped as the horse hurtled through the air, smashing through the protective barrier. As Windspear sailed over the table, Julian flung himself from the horse's back, falling heavily onto the flat stone surface beside Tavi. Emma felt the bone-jarring shock of his pain go through her own body. Mark kept his seat as Windspear swept over the table and landed on the other side of the circle. The circle itself, now pierced, began to writhe like an illuminated serpent, the runes flaring up one by one and then going out. Julian was pulling himself up onto his knees. Malcolm snarled and reached for Tavi, just as a figure dropped from the ceiling and knocked him to the ground. It was Kieran. His hair shimmered blue-green, and he raised a blade that was the same sea color. It plunged down toward Malcolm's chest, but Malcolm threw his hands up. Dark purple light exploded from his palms, hurling Kieran back. Malcolm rose to his feet, his face twisted in a snarl of hate. He flung out a hand to crush Kieran into dust. Windspear gave a scream. The horse whirled around, hooves raised, and punched them into Malcolm's back. Somehow Mark kept his seat. The warlock went flying. The horse, red eyes wide, reared and snorted. Mark, grabbing a fistful of Windspear's mane, leaned down, his other hand outstretched toward Kieran. "Take it," Emma heard him say. "Kieran, take my hand." Kieran reached up, and Mark pulled him upright, hauling him onto Windspear's back. They swung around and charged at a knot of followers, the horse scattering them, Mark and Kieran reaching down to finish off the living dead, with strokes of their swords. Malcolm was dragging himself to his feet. His once white jacket was liberally stained now with dirt and blood. He began to move toward the table, where Julian was kneeling over Tavi, tugging at the chains that bound him. The protection circle surrounding them was still sputtering. Emma took a deep breath and raced for the table, leaping into the air. She felt a wavering snap of electricity as she passed through the broken circle, crouched, and flung herself upward. She landed on the table in a kneeling position beside Julian. "Move away," was all she had time to gasp. "Julian, move!" He rolled away from his brother, though she knew that letting go of Tavi was the last thing he wanted to do. He slid to the edge of the table and rose to his knees, leaning back, trusting Emma, giving her space. "A blade made by Wayland the Smith can cut anything." She swung down with Cortana, a few inches from Tavi's wrist. The edge of the blade sliced through the chain and it fell away, rattling. She heard Malcolm scream and a flash of violet fire split the room. Emma slashed down again with Cortana, severing the other chains holding Tavi to the table. "Go," she shouted at Julian. "Get him out of here." Julian caught up his little brother in his arms. Octavian hung limp, his eyes rolled back. Julian leaped down from the table. Emma didn't see him vanish into the tunnel. She had already whirled back around. Mark and Kieran were trapped at one end of the room by a group of followers, Diego and Christina at another. Malcolm was advancing on Ty and Livy. He raised his hand again, and a small figure flew toward him, holding up a blazing serif blade. It was Drew. "Stay away from them," she shrieked, her blade shining between them. "Stay away from my brother and sister!" Malcolm snarled, curling his finger toward her. A rope of purple light coiled around Drew's legs, jerking her off her feet. The serif blade rolled away, sputtering against the stone. "I still need Blackthorn blood," Malcolm said, reaching down for her. "And yours will do as well as your little brother's would have. In fact, you look like you'd have a lot more of it." "Stop!" Emma shouted. Malcolm looked up at her and froze. Emma was standing upright on the stone table. One hand clutched Cortana, the other hand the candelabra of Hands of Glory.
It took you a long time to collect these, didn't it? She said in a cold voice. The hands of 13 murderers. Not so easy. Malcolm released Drew, and she scuttled away toward the far side of the room, scrabbling in her belt for another weapon. Malcolm's face contorted.
Give it back.
Call them off, Emma said. Call off your followers, and I'll give you back your hands of glory.
Deprive me of my chance to regain Annabelle, and you will pay with agony, he snarled.
Can't be worse than the agony of hearing you talk, Emma said. Call them off, or I'll cut these disgusting things into tiny pieces. She tightened her grip on Cortana. Let's see if you can do a magic spell with those.
Malcolm's gaze swept the room. The bodies of followers littered the cavern, but some of them were still on their feet, pinning Diego and Christina in the corner of the room. Mark and Kieran were astride Windspear, both laying about themselves with blades. The horse's hooves were stained red-brown with blood. The warlock's hands clenched at his sides. He turned and spat a few words in Greek, and the remaining followers began to fall, crumpling to the ground. Diego and Christina dashed over to Drew. Kieran brought Windspear to a halt, and the fairy steed stood still as the dead fell dead once again. Malcolm charged toward the table. Emma ran the length of it, sprang off the end, and landed lightly on the floor. Then she kept running. She ran toward the rows of chairs that had been set up for the followers, down the aisle between them, and into the shadows. The faint glow of Cortana gave enough light that she could see a dark corridor between rocks, snaking away into the hill. She plunged into it. Only the glowing moss on the walls gave any illumination. She thought she could see a glimmer in the distance and pressed on, though running with a heavy candelabra was making her arm ache. The corridor forked. Hearing footsteps behind her, Emma plunged to the left. She had only been running for a few yards when a glass wall loomed up in front of her. The porthole. It had grown larger, filling nearly a whole wall. The massive lever Emma remembered protruded from the stone beside it. The porthole glowed from within like an enormous aquarium. Behind the glass she could see the ocean. It was radiant, a deep blue-green. She could see fish and drifting seaweed and strange lights and colors beyond the glass.
"Oh, Emma!"
"Emma!" said Malcolm's voice behind her.
"You took the wrong path, didn't you? But one could say that about so much of your life."
Emma spun and jabbed the candelabra toward Malcolm. "Get away from me!"
"Do you have any idea how precious those hands are?" he demanded.
"For the fullest potency, they had to be severed just after the murder was performed. Setting up the killings was a feat of skill and daring and timing. You can't believe how annoyed I was when you took Sterling from me before I could collect his hand. Belinda had to bring me both of them so I could discern which was the murdering instrument. And then Julian calling me for help, a stroke of luck, I have to say."
"It wasn't luck. We trusted you."
"And I trusted shadow hunters once," said Malcolm. "We all make mistakes."
"Keep him talking," she thought. "The others will follow me."
"Johnny Rook said you told him to tell me about the body dump at the sepulchre," she said.
"Why? Why set me on your trail?"
He moved a step forward. She jabbed the candelabra toward him. He held his hands up as if to placate her.
"I needed you distracted. I needed you focused on the victims, not the murderers. Besides, you had to learn about the situation before the ferry convoy arrived on your doorstep.
And asked us to investigate the murders you were committing. What did you get out of that?"
"I got the absolute promise that the Clave would stay out of it," said Malcolm. "Individual shadow hunters don't frighten me, Emma, but the whole mess of them could be a mess indeed. I've known Aerloth a long time. I knew he had connections to the Wild Hunt, and I knew the Wild Hunt had something that would make you move heaven and earth to keep information from the Clave and the Silent Brothers.
Nothing against the boy personally. At least his Blackthorn stock is diluted by some good, healthy downworlder blood. But I know Julian. I knew what he'd prioritize, and it wasn't the law or the Clave."
"You underestimated us," Emma said. "We figured it out. We realized it was you."
"I thought they might send a centurion, but I never guessed he'd be someone you knew, trusted enough to take into your confidence despite Mark. When I saw the Rosales boy, I realized I didn't have much time. I knew I'd have to take Tavi right away. Thankfully, I had Aerloth's help, which has been invaluable."
"Oh," he added, "I heard about the whipping. I'm very sorry about that. Aerloth has his own ways of having fun, and they aren't mine."
"You're sorry?" Emma stared in disbelief.
You killed my parents, and you're apologizing? I'd rather be whipped 1,000 times than have my parents back.
I know what you're thinking. You shadow hunters all think alike. But I need you to understand, Malcolm broke off, his face working. If you understood, he said, you wouldn't blame me.
Then tell me what happened, Emma said. She could see the corridor behind him, over his shoulder. Thought she could see shapes, shadows in the distance. If she could keep him distracted and the others could attack from behind.
You went to Ferry, she said, when you found out that Annabelle wasn't an Iron Sister, that she'd been murdered. Is that how you know Erloth?
Despite not being born gentry, he was the right hand of the Unseelie King back then, said Malcolm. When I went, I knew the king might have me murdered. They don't much like warlocks, but I didn't care. And when the king asked me for a favor, I did it. In return, he gave me the rhyme. A spell custom-made to raise my Annabelle. Blackthorn blood. Blood for blood, that's what the king said.
So why didn't you just raise her right then? Why wait?
Fairy magic and warlock magic are very different, said Malcolm. It was like translating something from another language. It took me years to decipher the poem. Then I realized it was telling me to find a book. I almost went out of my mind. Years of translation, and all I got was a riddle about a book.
His eyes bored into hers, as if he were willing her to understand.
It was just chance that it was your parents, he said. They returned to the Institute while I was there. But it didn't work. I did everything, the spellbook said, and Annabelle didn't stir.
My parents!
Your love for them wasn't greater than my love for Annabelle, Malcolm said. I was trying to make things fair.
It was never about hurting you.
I don't hate the Carstairs. Your parents were sacrifices.
Malcolm.
They would have sacrificed themselves, wouldn't they? He asked reasonably. For the Clave? For you?
A rage so great it was numbing washed through Emma. It was all she could do to stay still.
So you waited 5 years?
She choked out the question. Why 5 years?
I waited until I thought I'd gotten the spell right, said Malcolm. I used the time to learn, to build.
I took Annabelle's body from her tomb and moved it to the Convergence. I created the followers of the Guardian. Belinda was the first murderer.
I followed the ritual, burned and soaked the body, carved the markings onto it, and I felt Annabelle move. His eyes shone an unholy blue-violet. I knew I was bringing her back. After that, nothing could have stopped me.
But why those markings? Emma pressed herself back against the wall. The candelabra was heavy. Her arm was throbbing. Why the Unseelie King's poem?
Because it was a message, Malcolm cried. Emma, for someone who's talked so much about revenge, who's lived it and breathed it, you don't seem to understand much about it. I needed the Shadow Hunters to know. I needed the Blackthorns to know. When the youngest of them lay dead, whose hand had dealt them that blow? When someone has wronged you, it isn't enough that they suffer. They need to look at your face and know why they suffer. I needed the Clave to decipher that poem and learn exactly who would be their destruction.
Destruction? Emma couldn't help her incredulous echo.
You're insane. Killing Tavi wouldn't destroy the Nephilim, and none of them who are alive even know about Annabelle.
And how do you think that feels? He shouted. Her name forgotten, her fate buried. The Shadow Hunters turned her into a story. I think several of her kinsmen went mad. They couldn't bear what they'd done, couldn't bear the weight of the secret.
Keep him talking, Emma thought.
If it was such a secret, how did Poe know? The poem, Annabelle Lee?
Something flashed across the backs of Malcolm's eyes, something secretive and dark. When I heard it, I thought it was a sickening coincidence, he said. But it obsessed me. I went to talk to the poet, but he had died. Annabelle was his last work. His voice was bleak with memory. Years went by, and I believed her to be in the Adamant Citadel. It was all that comforted me, that she was alive somewhere. When I found out, I wanted to deny it, but it was a poem that proved the facts of it. Poe had learned the truth from Downworlders, learned it before I did. How Annabelle and I had loved as children, how she would have left the Nephilim for me, but her family heard of it and decided death was preferable to life with a warlock. They'd walled her up in a tomb by the Cornwall Sea, walled her up alive.
Later, when I moved her body, I kept it near the ocean. She always loved the water.
His breath was coming in sobs now. Emma, unable to move, stared. His grief was as raw and real as if what he were talking about had happened yesterday.
They told me she'd become an Iron Sister. All of them lied to me.
Magnus, Katerina, Ragnar, Tessa, corrupted by shadow hunters, drawn in by their lies. And I, oblivious, grieving for her, until finally I found out the truth.
Sudden voices echoed in the hall. Emma heard the sound of running feet. Malcolm snapped his fingers. Violet light shimmered in the tunnel behind them, its iridescence fading as it grew dimmer and more opaque, solidifying into a wall. The sound of voices and footsteps vanished. Emma stood inside a sealed cave with Malcolm. She backed up, clutching the candelabra.
"I'll destroy the hands," she warned, her heart pounding. "I'll do it."
Dark fire sparked at his fingertips.
"I could let you go," he said, "let you live. Swim away through the ocean like you did before. You could carry my message back for me, my message to the Clave."
"I don't need you to let me go," she was breathing hard. "I'd rather fight."
His smile was twisted, almost sorrowful. "You and your sword, no matter its history, are no match for a warlock, Emma."
"What do you want from me?" she demanded, her voice rising, echoing off the walls of the cave. "What do you want, Malcolm?"
"I want you to understand," he said through gritted teeth. "I want someone to tell the Clave what they're responsible for. I want them to know the blood on their hands. I want them to know why."
Emma stared at Malcolm, a thin, stretched figure in a stained white jacket, sparks dancing along the edges of his fingertips. He frightened her and made her sad, all at the same time.
"Your why doesn't matter," she said finally. "Maybe you did what you did in the name of love. But if you think that makes any difference, you're no better than the Clave."
He moved toward her, and Emma flung the candelabra at him. He ducked away and it missed, hitting the rock floor with a clang. The fingers of the severed hand seemed to curl as if to protect themselves. Emma planted her feet apart, remembering Jace Herondale years ago in Idris, showing her how to stand so you'd never be knocked down. She gripped the hilt of Cortana in a two-fisted grip, and this time she remembered Clary Fairchild and the words she'd said to Emma in Idris when Emma had been 12 years old.
"Heroes aren't always the ones who win. They're the ones who lose sometimes. But they keep fighting. They keep coming back. They don't give up. That's what makes them heroes."
Emma sprang toward Malcolm, Cortana upraised. He reacted with a second's delay, flinging his hand toward her, light bursting from his fingers. It sizzled toward her, a streak of gold and violet light. The delay gave her time to duck. She spun and raised Cortana over her head. Magic slid off the blade. She threw herself at Malcolm again and he ducked away, though not before she had slashed open his sleeve, just above the elbow. He barely seemed to notice.
"The death of your parents was necessary," he said. "I had to see if the book worked."
"No, you didn't," Emma snarled, brandishing Cortana. "You should know better than to try to raise the dead."
"Because if Julian died, you wouldn't try to bring him back,"
said Malcolm with a delicate rise of his eyebrows, and Emma recoiled as if he'd slapped her.
"You wouldn't bring your mother and father back?" "Oh, it's so easy for you, as it is for all shadow hunters standing there, making your moral pronouncements, as if you're better than the rest of us."
"I am better," Emma said. "I'm better than you, because I'm not a murderer, Malcolm." To Emma's shock, Malcolm recoiled, a true recoil of surprise, as if he hadn't imagined being called a murderer before. Emma lunged, Cortana outstretched.
The sword drove into Malcolm's chest, splitting his blazer, and rammed to a stop as if she'd stabbed it into a boulder. She shrieked with pain as what felt like a bolt of electricity went up her arm. She heard Malcolm laugh, and a wave of energy shot from his outstretched finger slamming into her body. She was lifted and hurled backward, magic tearing through her like a bullet ripping a hole through a paper screen. She hit the uneven stone ground on her back, Cortana still gripped in her nerveless hand. Red pain misted behind her eyelids. Through the fog, she saw Malcolm standing over her.
"Oh, that was precious," he grinned. "That was amazing. That was the hand of God, Emma."
He yanked his blazer open, and Emma saw what Cortana had struck. The black volume, tucked into the inside pocket of his jacket. Cortana dropped from her hand, the metal hitting stone. Wincing, Emma shoved herself up onto her elbows, just as Malcolm bent down and seized the dropped candelabra.
He looked at it and then down at her, his grin still slashed across his face.
"Thank you," he said. "These hands of glory would have been very hard to replace. Now, Blackthorn blood. That'll be easy."
"Stay away from the Blackthorns," Emma said, and was horrified to hear the weakness of her own voice. What had the black volume done to her? Her chest felt as if something heavy had been rolled onto it, and her arm burned and ached.
"You don't know anything," Malcolm snarled.
"You don't know the monsters they are."
"Have you?" Emma said in a near whisper. "Have you always hated them? Julian and the rest?"
"Always," he said. "Even when it seemed like I loved them." Emma's arm was still burning, an agony that felt as if her skin was being lanced down to the bone. Her endurance rune felt as if it were on fire. She tried not to let it show on her face.
"That's horrible. It's not their fault. You can't blame them for their ancestors' sins."
"Blood is blood," Malcolm said. "We are all what we were born to be. I was born to love Annabel, and that was taken from me. Now I live only for revenge, just as you have, Emma. How many times have you told me that all you want in life is to kill the one who killed your parents? What would you give up for it? Would you give up the Blackthorns? Would you give up your precious Parabatai, the one you're in love with?" His eyes glittered as she shook her head in denial. "Please. I always saw the way you looked at each other. And then Julian told me that your rune had healed him from Rook's poison. No normal Shadow Hunter's rune should have been able to do that."
"Not proof of anything," Emma gasped.
"Proof? You want proof?"
"I saw you, the two of you, on the beach, sleeping in each other's arms. I stood over you and watched you and thought how easy it would be to kill you. But then I realized that would be a mercy, wouldn't it? Killing the two of you while you were in each other's arms. There's a reason you can't fall in love with your Parabatai, Emma. And when you find out what it is, you will feel the cruelty of the Shadow Hunters just as I have."
"You're a liar," she said in her weakest voice, her words trailing off into a whisper. The pain in her arm had gone. She thought of people who bled nearly to death, how they talked about the fact that in the last moments all the pain vanished. Smiling, Malcolm knelt down beside her. He patted her left hand. Her fingers twitched.
"Let me tell you a truth before you die, Emma," he said. "It is a secret about the Nephilim. They hate love, human love, because they are born of angels. And while God charged his angels to take care of humans, the angels were made first, and they have always hated God's second creation. That is why Lucifer fell. He was an angel who would not bow to mankind, God's favorite child. Love is the weakness of human beings, and the angels despise them for it, and the clave despises it too, and therefore they punish it. Do you know what happens to Parabatai who fall in love? Do you know why it's forbidden?" She shook her head. His mouth quirked into a smile. There was something about that smile, so faint and yet so full of bone-deep hatred, that chilled her the way none of his grinning had. "Then you have no idea what your death will spare your beloved Julian," he said. "So think about that as life leaves your body. In a way, your death is a mercy." He raised his hand, violet fire beginning to crackle between his fingers. He hurled his magic at her, and Emma flung her arm up, the arm that Julian had carved the endurance rune on, the arm that had been burning and aching and screaming at her to use it since she'd struck the black volume. Fire slammed into her arm. She felt it like a hard blow, but nothing more. The endurance rune was pulsing through her body with its power, and alongside that power rose her own rage. Rage at knowing Malcolm had killed her parents. Rage for the wasted years she'd searched for their killer when he'd been right in front of her. Rage for every time he'd smiled at Julian or picked up Tavi when his heart was full of hate. Rage at one more thing that had been taken from the Blackthorns. She seized Cortana and wrenched herself to her knees, her hair flying as she drove the sword into Malcolm's gut. This time there was no black volume to block her thrust. She felt the blade go in, felt it tear through skin and rip past bone. She saw the tip of it burst out through his back, his white jacket soaked through with red blood. She sprang to her feet, yanking the sword free. He made a choking noise.
Blood was spilling onto the ground, running across the stone, spattering the hands of Glory.
"This is for my parents," she said, and slammed his body as hard as she could against the glass wall. She felt his ribs snap as the glass behind him fissured. Water began to pour through the cracks. She felt it splatter against her face, salty as tears.
"I'll tell you about the Parabatai curse," he gasped. "The glaive will never let you know it. It's forbidden. Kill me, and you'll never learn."
With her left hand, Emma yanked down the lever. She threw herself behind the glass door as it swung open, and the current exploded through. It moved like a living thing, like a hand shaped out of water, formed by the sea. It surrounded Malcolm, and for a frozen moment, Emma saw him there clearly, struggling with feeble motions, within a whirlpool of water, water that spilled across the floor, water that gripped him, encircling him like an unbreakable net. It lifted Malcolm off his feet. He gave a cry of terror, and the ocean took him, the current rushing back out, carrying him with it. The glass door slammed shut. The silence the water left behind was deafening. Exhausted, Emma slumped against the glass of the porthole door. Through it she could see the ocean, the color of the night sky. Malcolm's body was a pale white star in the darkness, drifting among the weeds, and then a dark, spiky talon curled upward through the ripples and caught hold of Malcolm by the ankle. With a quick jerk, his body was yanked down and out of view. There was a bright flicker. Emma turned to see that the violet wall of light in the corridor behind her had vanished. Spells disappeared when the warlocks who cast them died.
"Emma!"
There were pounding footsteps in the corridor. Out of the shadows, Julian appeared. She saw his stricken expression as he caught her to him, his hands knotting in her soaked, blood-stained gear.
"Emma, God, I couldn't get to you through the wall. I knew you were there, but I couldn't save you."
"You saved me," she said hoarsely, wanting to show him the endurance rune on her arm. But she was pressed too tightly against him to move.
"You did.
You don't know it, but you did." And then she heard their voices, the others, coming toward them down the corridor. Mark, Christina, Diego, Diana.
"Tavi," she whispered, "is he?"
"He's fine. He's outside with Ty and Livy and Drew." He kissed her temple.
"Emma."
His lips brushed hers. She felt a shock of love and pain go through her.
"Let me go," she whispered. "You have to let me go. They can't see us like this. Julian, let me go."
His head came up, his eyes full of agony, and he moved away. She saw what it cost him, saw the tremor in his hands as he lowered them to his sides, felt the space between them like the space of a wound torn into flesh. She dragged her gaze from his and looked down at the ground. The floor was awash with seawater and blood, ankle deep. Somewhere Malcolm's candelabra floated beneath the surface. Emma was glad. The salt would dissolve Malcolm's gruesome monument to murder. Dissolve it and pick it clean, and it would be white bones, settling as Malcolm's body settled to the floor of the ocean. And for the first time in a long time, Emma felt grateful to the sea. 26. The Winged Seraphs of Heaven.
"The Parabatai curse. The clave will never let you know it. It's forbidden."
Malcolm's words rang in Emma's ears as she made her way back out into the night, following the others down the damp corridors of the Convergence. Julian and Emma walked deliberately apart, keeping distance between them. Exhaustion and pain were slowing Emma down. Cortana was back in its sheath. She could feel the sword humming with energy. She wondered if it had absorbed magic from Malcolm. But then she didn't want to think about Malcolm, the red tendrils of his blood unfurling through the dark water like banners. She didn't want to think about things he'd said. Emma was the last to step out of the cave, into the darkness of the outside world. Ty, Livy, and Drew were sitting on the ground with Tavi. The little boy was cradled in Livy's arms, seeming sleepy but awake. Kieran stood a distance away, a scowl on his face that relaxed only somewhat when Mark emerged from the Convergence. "How is Tavi? Is everything all right?" Julian approached his siblings. Drew jumped up and hugged him tightly, then gasped and pointed. A loud grinding noise cracked through the air. The gap in the hill was closing up behind them like a wound healing. Diana darted toward it, as if she could hold the pathway open, but the stone sealed shut. She snatched her hand back just in time to keep it from being crushed.
"You cannot stop it," said Kieran. "The opening and the path inside were made by Malcolm.
This hill does not naturally hold within its tunnels and caves. Now that he is dead, his enchantments are failing. There may perhaps be another entrance into this space, at some other ley line convergence, but this door will not open again.
How did you know he was dead? Emma said.
Lights going on in the city below, said Karen. I don't know what your mundane word is for it.
Blackout, said Mark. The blackout's over. And Malcolm cast a spell that was responsible for the blackout, so, yeah. Does that mean we can get a signal on our phones? Ty wondered. I'll check, Julian said and walked away to press his phone to his ear. Emma thought she heard him say Uncle Arthur's name, but she couldn't be sure, and he moved out of earshot before she could hear another word. Diego and Christina had joined Livy, Ty, and Drew. Christina was bending down over Tavi, and Diego was reaching for something inside his gear jacket. Emma moved to join them. As she drew closer, she saw that Diego was holding a silver flask.
Not giving him booze, are you? Emma said. He's a little young for it.
Diego rolled his eyes.
It's an energy draft, made by the Silent Brothers. Might counteract whatever Malcolm gave him to make him sleepy.
Livy took the flask from Diego and tasted the contents. With a nod, she tipped the fluid into her little brother's mouth. Tavi drank gratefully as Emma knelt down and put her hand to his cheek.
Hey, sweetheart, she said, are you all right?
He smiled up at her, blinking. He looked like Julian when he and Emma were children, before the world had changed him.
My best friend and my best love.
She thought of Malcolm, the Parabatai curse. Her heart aching, she kissed Tavi's baby soft cheek and rose to her feet to find Christina behind her. Your left arm, Christina said gently, and led her a few feet away. Hold it out. Emma obeyed and saw that the skin of her hand and wrist was red and blistered, as if she'd been burned. Christina shook her head, drawing her steely from her jacket.
There were a few minutes there when you were behind that wall, Malcolm made, where I thought you weren't coming out.
Emma bumped her head against Christina's shoulder.
Sorry.
I know, Christina turned brisk, pushing up Emma's sleeve. You need healing runes. Emma leaned into Christina as the steely ran over her skin, taking comfort in the fact that she was there.
It was weird being trapped in there with Malcolm, she said. Mostly he just wanted to tell me about Annabelle. And the thing is, I actually felt bad for him.
It's not weird, said Christina. It's a terrible story.
Neither he nor Annabelle did anything wrong. To see someone you love so horribly punished and tortured. To think they'd abandoned you only to find out that you abandoned them.
She shuddered.
I hadn't thought about it that way, Emma said.
You think he felt guilty?
I'm sure he did. Anyone would.
Emma thought of Annabelle with a pang. She had been blameless, a victim. Hopefully she had never been aware of anything, never been aware of Malcolm's efforts to revive her.
I told him he was as bad as the Clave, and he actually seemed surprised.
No one is ever the villain of their own story.
Christina released Emma, pausing to examine her healing handiwork. Already the pain in Emma's arm was receding. She knew a rune from Julian would most likely have worked more quickly, but after what had happened with the endurance rune, she didn't dare let him rune her in front of everyone else.
Julian.
Past Christina's shoulder, she could see him near the car. He was holding his phone to his ear. As she watched, he tapped the screen and slid it back into his pocket.
So are the signals working again? Ty asked. Who are you calling?
Pizza, Julian said.
They all stared at him. Like the rest of them, he was filthy, a long scratch along his cheek, his hair tangled. In the moonlight, his eyes were the color of an underground river.
Thought we might all be hungry, he said with that deceptive mildness that Emma now knew meant that whatever was happening on the surface didn't match what was going on in Julian's mind.
We should go, he said. The convergence's collapse means the Clave is going to be able to see the dark magic emanating from this place on their map. When we get back, I don't think we'll be alone.
They hurried to get everyone ready to go. Livy carrying Octavian on her lap in the back seat of the Toyota, Diana taking Christina and Diego in the truck, which she had hidden among some scrub brush. Kieran offered the use of Windspear again to Mark, but Mark declined.
I wish to ride with my brothers and sisters, he said simply.
Julian turned to Kieran. The fairy's eyes were flat, unreflective. Julian wished he could see what his brother had loved, a Kieran who had been warm toward Mark or kind. He wished he could thank Kieran for not leaving Mark alone among the hunt.
He wished he felt less hatred in his heart.
"You don't need to come back with us," Julian said. "We don't need your help anymore."
"I will not go until I know Mark is safe."
Julian shrugged.
"Have it your way. When we get back, don't come into the Institute until we say so. We'd be in trouble for just fighting alongside you." Kieran's mouth hardened.
"Without me, you would have been defeated this night."
"Probably," said Julian. "I'll remember to be grateful every time I see the scars on Emma's back."
Kieran flinched. Julian turned and walked toward the car. Diana cut in front of him, holding up a hand. She was wrapped in a heavy shawl, and her face was speckled with blood like light freckles.
"The Clave may well be waiting for you," she said without preamble. "If you want, I'll take the blame for everything and throw myself on their mercy."
Julian looked at her for a long moment. He had lived by ironclad rules for so long. Protect Tavi, protect Livy and Ty, protect Drew, protect Emma. Recently, that had widened out slightly. He would protect Mark, because Mark had come back, and he would protect Christina, because Emma loved her. It was a sort of love few other people could understand. It was total, and it was overwhelming, and it could be cruel. He would destroy a whole city if he thought that city posed some threat to his family. When you were 12 years old, and you were all that stood between your family and annihilation, you didn't learn moderation. He considered now, with all the detachment he could muster, what would happen if Diana tried to take the blame. He entertained the idea, turned it over in his head, and rejected it. "No," he said. "And I'm not being kind. I don't think it would work." "Julian." "You hide things," he said. "The angel knows there's something you're still hiding, some reason you couldn't take over the Institute. Something you won't tell, anyway. You're a good hider, but you're not a good liar. They won't believe you, but they will believe me." "So you already have a story for them?" Diana asked, her dark eyes widening. Julian didn't say anything. She sighed, pulling the shawl tighter. "You're a piece of work, Julian Blackthorn." "I'll take that as a compliment," he said, though he doubted she meant it as one. "Did you know I'd be here tonight?" she asked. "Did you think I was in league with Malcolm?" "I didn't think it was likely," Julian said. "But then I don't entirely trust anyone." "That's not true," Diana said, looking across to where Mark was helping Emma into the driver's side of the car. Her blonde hair flew like sparks in the starlight. Diana glanced back at Julian. "You'd better get back. I'll make myself scarce until tomorrow." "I'll tell them you didn't know anything." "It isn't as if people don't deceive their tutors all the time. And you don't even live with us." He heard the Toyota start up. The others were waiting for him. "So you'll drop Diego and Christina at the Institute and then head home?" "I'll head somewhere," she said. He started toward the car, then paused and turned to look back at her. "Do you ever regret it? Choosing to be our tutor. You didn't have to." The wind blew her dark hair across her face. "No," she said. "I am who I am because I've been part of your family. Never forget, Jules, the choices we make, make us." The drive back was silent and exhausted. Ty was quiet, looking out the window of the passenger seat. Drew was curled up into a ball. Tavi was awake, but barely, his head against Livia's shoulder. Emma was slumped against a backseat window, holding Cortana, her damp blonde hair straggling around her face, her eyes closed. Mark was squeezed in beside her. Julian wanted to reach for Emma, slide his hand into hers, but he didn't dare, not in front of the others. He couldn't stop himself from reaching back from the driver's seat to touch Tavi's arm, though, making sure that his little boy was still alive, still all right. They were all still alive, and it was little short of a miracle. Julian felt as if every nerve in his body had been pulled out of his skin. He visualized the nerve endings exposed, each one like a sensor, reacting to the presence of his family around him. He thought of Diana saying, "You're going to have to let go." And he knew it was true. Someday he would have to open his hands, let his brothers and sisters go freely into the world, a world that would cut them, bruise them, knock them down, and not help them back up again. Someday he would have to do that. But not yet. Not quite yet. "Ty," Julian said. He spoke quietly so that the passengers in the back seat wouldn't hear him. "Yes?" Ty looked over. The shadows under his eyes were as gray as his irises. You were right, Julian said. I was wrong.
I was?
Tai sounded surprised. About what?
You coming with us to the Convergence, said Julian. You fought well, amazingly, in fact. If you hadn't been there... His throat closed up. It was a moment before he could speak again.
I'm grateful, he said.
And I'm also sorry. I should have listened.
You were right about what you could do.
Thanks, said Tai, for apologizing.
He fell silent, which Julian assumed meant the conversation was over. But after a few seconds, Tai leaned over and touched his head lightly to Julian's shoulder. A friendly headbutt, as if he were a church, seeking affection. Julian reached out to ruffle up his younger brother's hair and nearly smiled. The nascent smile vanished quickly when they bumped to a stop in front of the Institute. It was lit up like a Christmas tree. It had been dark when they'd left, and as they piled out of the car, Julian caught the faintest of faint glimmers on the air. He exchanged a look with Emma. Light in the air meant a portal, and a portal meant the Clave. Diana's truck pulled up, and Diego and Christina spilled out. They slammed the doors behind them, and the truck sped away. The Blackthorns had all emerged as well, some of them blinking and barely awake, Drew, Mark. Some looking quietly suspicious, Tai. And some nervous, Livy, who was clutching Tavi tightly. In the distance, Julian thought he could see the faint pale shape of Windspear. They headed toward the Institute steps together. At the top of the stairs, Julian hesitated with his hand on the front door. Anything could be waiting for him on the other side, from the massed array of the Council to a few dozen Clave warriors. Julian knew there was no more hiding Mark. He knew what his plans were. He knew they balanced like a million angels on the head of a pin. Chance, circumstance, and determination held them together. He glanced over and saw Emma looking at him. Though her tired and grimy face didn't break into a smile, he saw her confidence and her trust in him in her eyes. He'd missed one, he thought. Chance, circumstance, determination, and faith. He opened the door. The light in the entryway was blazingly bright. Both witchlight chandeliers were burning, and the upstairs gallery was illuminated by rows of torches that the family almost never used. Light glowed beneath the doors of the sanctuary. In the middle of the room stood Magnus Bane, resplendent in an elegant outfit, a brocade jacket and trousers, his fingers adorned with dozens of rings. Beside him was Clary Fairchild, her bright red hair tied up in a messy bun, wearing a delicate green dress. They both looked as if they had just come from a party. As Julian and the rest flooded into the room, Magnus raised an eyebrow.
"Well, well," he said. "Kill the fatted calf and all that. The prodigals have returned."
Clary's hand flew to her mouth.
"Emma, Julian," she whitened.
"Mark?
Mark Blackthorne?"
Mark said nothing. None of them did. Julian realized that unconsciously they had grouped themselves around Mark, a loose circle protecting him. Even Diego, wincing and blood-spattered, was part of it. Mark stood silent, his ragged pale blonde hair a halo around his head, his pointed ears and polychrome eyes clearly visible in the bright light. Magnus looked hard at Mark before glancing up toward the second floor.
"Jace," he called, "get down here."
Clary made a move toward the Blackthorns, but Magnus pulled her back gently. She was frowning.
"Are you all right?"
she said, directing the question to Emma, but clearly meaning it for all of them.
"Are you hurt?"
Before anyone could speak, there was a commotion at the top of the steps and a tall figure appeared there. Jace. The first time Julian had really met Jace Herondale, who was famous throughout the Shadowhunter world, Jace had been about 17 and Julian had been 12. Emma, who had also been 12, had not been shy about letting the world know she thought Jace was the handsomest and most amazing person who had ever graced the planet with his presence. Julian had not agreed, but then no one had asked him. Jace descended the stairs in a manner that made Julian wonder if Jace thought he had a magnificent train trailing behind him, slowly, deliberately, and as if he were aware that he was the focus of all eyes. Or maybe he was just used to being stared at. Emma had stopped going on about Jace at some point, but the Shadowhunter world in general considered him out of the ordinary in terms of looks. His hair was shockingly gold, and so were his eyes. Like Magnus and Clary, he looked like he had come from a party. He wore a wine-red blazer and an air of casual elegance. Reaching the bottom step, he glanced toward Julian, covered in blood and dirt,
and then toward the rest of them, just as ragged and stained.
"Well, either you've been out fighting the forces of evil, or you've come from a much wilder party than